Parthaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Puramunina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamritavarshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamanasantadami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini. Let's start with verse 17. We didn't get to the last half of that, so I want to start at 17. Uttamav purushastvanyaha Uttamav purushastvanyaha Paramatmetyudahritaha Paramatmetyudahritaha Yo loka trayama visya Bhiparajavyaya ishwaraha Uttamaha purushaha tu anyaha Paramatma iti udahritaha Yaha loka trayam avishya Viparati avyayaha Ishwaraha. Okay, breaking the Sandhi. So, this 17 is distinguishing the Uttama Purusha, Brahman, the Self, from the Akshara Purusha and the Kshara Purusha.
It's interesting. Purusha is the same. Kshara Purusha, Akshara Purusha, Uttama Purusha. Purusha is the same. Akshara Purusha is conscious being, the conscious Atma, which is Brahman, which is the Uttama Purusha, that most exalted Purusha, that one that is beyond the Kshara and the Akshara. The Kshara is this whole universe, everything in the manifest creation, everything that exists within time and space, the manifest Maya, this samsara, the samsara vriksha that we live in, the duality in which we live. This is the Kshara Purusha. The Kshara Purusha, because this manifest creation, including this body, mind, sense organs, subject-object relationships that we have within dualities, the whole manifest creation enjoys one Purusha, one being, which is the Atma. The Self that you are is the Self, which is the Self of the entire creation. So we can even say, if I take myself, when I say the Atma, this conscious being that I am, there's two important words. One is the consciousness, the other is being, the conscious being. And so it's not consciousness, a being which has consciousness or consciousness which exists, it's consciousness which is existence, that there's no separation between the two. There's two words which are defining what we call one vastu. So the one vastu, the one thing that is there, is consciousness, which is, which exists. So the difference, there is no differentiation between sat and chit. It's not one is a substantive and one is a quality. It's not that. It's that existence is consciousness. Consciousness is existence. And so the purusha means the person. You say that purusha. The word purusha, Swamiji, that this is defined, has different ways of defining it. One is that purusha comes from purna, that which is absolutely full, is the purusha. Another one is the one who abides in the city, the puri, the one who's resting in the city, at the puri of the body. So this body, which has seven gates, two eyes, two ears, and two nostrils, a mouth, and excretion, so the seven entrances and exits in this body. So those are the seven gates of the city. And so the puri is likened to the body. So the one who's abiding there in the puri, in the city of the body, or the one who is absolutely full. So that's the purushas. Purusha is the Atma. The Atma, the conscious being that you are, is as the Uttama Purusha, is the one who is free from, beyond, and the most exalted, in reference to the Purusha in the Kshara Purusha and the Akshara Purusha. So now, what do we mean? This Kshara Purusha means that which is subject to destruction, that which is subject to change. That's this whole samsara vriksha. Samsara vriksha means tree. So this tree of samsara, if you remember when this chapter 15 started, the urdhamulam adeshakam, it starts with the image of the samsara vriksha, the tree of samsara. So this kshara purusha is this manifest creation that we enjoy, but this manifest creation enjoys across the board equally on every level sat, existence, being. That's something that everybody can agree on. Everything that you experience is. So this is, my thought is, my emotion is, my imagination is, my dream is. You might say that the dream has a pratibhasika reality, but when the dream is there, it is. When the world is there, it is. Whatever I perceive is, whatever I experience is, across the board. It's not that one thing has more isness than another. When it is there, it is. We can say pratibhasika, the subjective reality, like for instance the dream or your imagination. You can compare that order of reality with like the waking state, where it's a perceptual reality that is vyavahara, empirical reality, which has a longer lifespan. We say this is more real than the subjective reality. But that's only comparing the subjective reality with the empirical reality, with the shared reality. So in reference to one, the subjective reality doesn't last as long as the shared reality. The subjective reality is something that comes out of, in a sense, the shared reality. But that's comparing the two. Right? But from the standpoint, but from in terms of their relationship to being, for both of them, it's absolutely equal. When the pratibhasika is there, it is. When the shared reality, empirical reality is there, it is. When your thought is there, it is. When the emotion is there, it is. When the ahankara, the I thought is there, it is. When the memory is there, it is. Whatever experience that you have, there's a common denominator that is unwavering. We are not used to differentiating that common denominator of being from the objects. We just naturally superimpose isness on all of the objects. There's another common denominator. That common denominator in terms of all of your experience, we don't think of it like this, but it happens to be true. You cannot have an experience which is not known. Just from the standpoint of the jiva. Whatever experience you have, that experience is known. It is known as much as it is. We try to have an experience, whether it be a thought, an emotion, a memory, a perception, an imagination, that is not known. Knownness and isness actually are one and the same. Why we conveniently distinguish the two is only from the standpoint of this creation within the creation, where we can say everything within this creation enjoys sat, isness, but not everything enjoys consciousness. Right? So I have to explain how one thing can enjoy consciousness, isness and consciousness, but another can only enjoy isness. So we have to explain that. Because actually consciousness and existence are one and the same thing. Right? So this has to be explained. Why in this creation then isn't everything conscious? Right? Because the problem here is that we think of consciousness as knowing, as a verb. When we think of consciousness, we think of I am conscious of something, rather than just self-evident. We think of consciousness only as a jiva in terms of my sense organs and my mind, which function as knowers. So for me to be conscious means I know something, I'm involved in a subject-object relationship. I never think of consciousness per se. Just consciousness without any sense organs, consciousness without a mind, consciousness without sense organs. But if you take the mind away and the sense organs, then all that's left is consciousness. Where is there any knowership? If you get rid of the mind and the sense organs, where is there knowership? There's just self-evident conscious being, you know? So we don't think, we don't, when we think of the self, we think of myself as a knower, not as a self-evident conscious being. And that ties us so strongly to the upadhi, to the body, mind, sense organs, because I can't imagine myself as a conscious being without being a knower. Right? So I have to, there's a jump I have to make, even in terms of recognizing my experience, the experience I'm having right now as a human being, this experience that I'm having. I have to make a jump where I recognize that at the same time that right now, through my eyes, which are an instrument, which are known to me by my mind, I'm aware of my eyes, through my eyes I am seeing you. Through my eyes there's this knowership, seer seen. Through my ears there is knowership, hearer heard. Through my mind there are thoughts. There's thoughts, there are thinking, there's emotions. All these things exist in the mind. There's enjoying. I enjoy this. I know this. All of these dual functions, subject-object functions, take place depending upon the mind and the sense organs. But now, the mind and the sense organs are illumined. They enjoy consciousness. Right? Now the question is, this me, they enjoy me. They are my instruments. They are instruments of me, the conscious being. So accept me as the self-evident conscious being. But this consciousness, which the mind is enjoying, this conscious me, am I doing anything other than being conscious me? Am I knowing something? Am I a verb? Am I doing anything other than being consciousness? You see, well, think about the sun. The sun illumines everything. Is it a verb? Is it doing an activity of illumining? Or is it that because the sun is, everything is illumined? It's quite a bit different. Is the sun thinking, let me illumine the earth now? No. Let me shine upon the day. Light all the clouds up. Is the sun performing some sort of a function, or is it because it is light that things are lit up? So we say like that, you are consciousness. And because you are consciousness, things are lit up. What are lit up? We'd say the mind is lit up, the sense organs are lit up. The mind lights up the sense organs light up the body and light up the world, like that. But what about me? So consciousness, the me experience, even if you can think, just be aware of yourself right now. There's perception going on, there's talking, there's listening going on. There are thoughts going on. But what is this yourself doing? Just your own presence. There's a viveka, there's a discrimination that has to be made there where you recognize that in fact your being, the me, what is me, is not doing anything and never does anything. It is self-evident consciousness. So it is known. It is known without a knower. It is known, you are self-luminous, self-evident. You don't require a knower. You are the self because of which things are known. See what I mean? So that freedom of being has to be recognized. It's only because of this nature of my being, in fact, that I can be you. That I, this me, can be Ishwara. If this me is performing a function of knowing, right, then I should know everything. I should know what's going to, for me to be you, if I'm a knower, then I should know what's going on in your mind. Whatever experiences you're having, I should be aware of that. Right? It's not true. But it's not true and need not be true because the self that I am is not a knower at all. Think like this. It's just self-evident, the self-evident sun of consciousness. Think about this. when you have a dream. The dream then, as it manifests, there is a universe that is known. This is important. The universe, the dream universe is known. It is known because you are known. The conscious, self-evident consciousness from which the dream comes, that whole dream enjoys the knownness, the self-evident nature of your being. So that whole Maya, that whole Maya manifestation, enjoys knownness. Now, in this known, the whole thing is known, we can say that makes me the Ishwara of my dream. Because I am the self, I'm the conscious me of that whole dream. And then in that dream, there are tables and rugs, you know, and lamps, which are known, but aren't themselves knowers. These are just known. They don't have a subtle body to reflect consciousness. But in your dream, there are also people, and there can be plants, and there can be animals. Those not only are known, they are knowers from the standpoint of their mind and sense organs, right? This doesn't have mind and sense organs. This doesn't have mind and sense organs. So all these experience, the experience of these, is satchit, conscious being. But here, the experience of this body, mind, sense organs is satchit, conscious. It is known and it is. This is known and it is. But because I have a mind and sense organs, the mind and sense organs, which are known, they also know. They're both known, right? Because I'm aware of my mind, I'm aware of my sense organs. They are known. But they also function as knowers. Right? So that's the difference between the table and the human being. The human being has sense organs and mind, which as though reflect consciousness. And the table doesn't. But it's the same, they still exist within the same order of reality. Like if I hold up a mirror and a rock to the sun, the mirror and the rock exist in the same order of reality, but one reflects the sun and the other doesn't. But they're both material. They both belong to this plane of existence. So everything about you and me, they belong to this plane of existence, except the human being has a sukshma sharira, a subtle body which transmigrates, but still within duality. That subtle body reflects consciousness. If there's no subtle body there, it doesn't reflect consciousness. In one way, it doesn't reflect consciousness as a knower. Now I want you to look again at your experience here. Everything is, and everything is known. The satchit, conscious being, is invariable and it is changeless. There's not a thing you can do about it. And so the satchit, that is me. The satchit is not. Conscious being is not some abstract principle. It's when you think of yourself, you, that you identify with as you, except that you put all this baggage on it, but the you that you identify with as you, that is invariable. It is ever-present. It doesn't matter what experience you have. And the experiences all come and go. There's only one thing that is invariable that doesn't come and go, and that is me, the conscious being. And that conscious being me, even now, at this moment, is totally free from any type of change or activity or knowership. And so you need to be able to recognize that right now there's your eyes, your sense organs are functioning, your mind is functioning, all enjoying consciousness. But this me, the me that you are, is not doing anything. It is just self-evident me. Self-evident means I am known to myself without a subject. Subject means without a subject, there's no subject-object relationship. There's no one knowing me so that I can be known. I am the me, the conscious being, that is invariable, never changing. So that me is what the one that is invariable, never changing, is the Uttama Purusha. That is the Uttama Purusha, the one that is a really different order of reality from all of the experiences that come and go. We say the Kshara Purusha, we keep the word Kshara because the very Purusha, the very being which all of this enjoys, right, is the Uttama Purusha. So this creation that is continually changing, everything that we experience here is continually changing, continually coming and going, but it enjoys the Sat-Chit, the conscious being of me. Everything is and everything is known. That's the Uttama Purusha. The is-knownness is the Uttama Purusha. It never varies. But the Kshara Purusha, this which is continually changing, is never away from that Uttama Purusha, from my being. This doesn't exist. The existence is the invariable. This has no existence, just like the pot has no existence at all apart from the clay. The clay is the invariable. The pot can become a plate, can become a tumbler, can become a blob. The nama rupa, the name and form, are the variables. That's kshara. Kshara means variable. It means it's subject to change. The clay doesn't change. Right? I don't change. Everything that changes is changing in the constancy of my being. This is the viveka that we have to make. So the purusha, from the standpoint of this changing creation, is called the kshara purusha. The akshara purusha is really Ishvara. The akshara purusha is Brahman, the uttama purusha, that purusha which is beyond any type of change or beyond the kshara and the akshara. If I take the uttama purusha, the conscious being that I am, plus the maya upadhi, that's the akshara. Akshara means that which never changes in this sense. The creation comes into manifestation and resolves into that akshara purusha. So we say, from last time we were talking, the creation is beginningless and it's cyclical. The whole manifest creation comes into manifestation, goes into, resolves, into manifestation, resolves. The one into which it resolves and comes out again, that's the akshara. That's what we call the causal condition that we had problems with last time. Causal condition. Causal condition, it's a way of describing a phenomena. This is the phenomenon. If I go to sleep at night, I am the one who wakes up. The one who went to sleep, the one who was up yesterday, went to sleep, and then that same person woke up, having the same memories, having the same parents, living in the same house, the one who can say, I did this yesterday, and then when I was a little girl, this happened. The one who has that, what we call that pratyabhijna, that sense of identity with a prior state of being. Right? So when I go to deep sleep, this mind, my mind, my body is breathing and all that, but the mind is in unmanifest condition. Because it exists, it doesn't go into non-existence, but it's not functioning. That's all what we mean. It is not functioning. There's no appreciation of duality in deep sleep. There's no subject-object relationship. There's no commentary going on. There's no dream going on. And yet the same person comes out. The same person that went into that causal condition is the one who comes out. So we say there's a... That the mind goes into its unmanifest condition, as opposed to the mind going into non-existence. If the mind went into non-existence, that mind can't come out again, right? So since it can come, say mind can go, it, so we won't say it goes into non-existence, it goes into unmanifest condition, so that it can again come out. That's the idea. So the kshara purusha, the akshara purusha is the one who is not destroyed. The one who doesn't get destroyed when the creation goes into unmanifest condition. It's just there, an unmanifest causal condition, that same creation comes out. That's the maya upadhi. That is Ishvara. When we talk about Ishvara, what we mean is Brahman, conscious being that has this naturally has this, what we call incidental attribute, that we call maya. Okay, the incidental attribute means the maya cannot bring about any type of change to the vastu, to what is actually there. So maya is there as an incidental attribute to Brahman because it can't touch Brahman, it can't bring about any change in Brahman, but it's natural to Brahman. There's no place else to put it. Brahman is non-dual, right? And then this thing is, but it doesn't have the capacity to change Brahman. It's as though a different order of reality. Maya is a different order of reality for Brahman from Brahman, which is why we say Maya is mitya. Mitya means mitya is different than satyam. Satyam, you have to understand these definitions and what they mean. If we say Brahman is one order of reality, which we call, it enjoys one order of reality, which we call satyam. Satyam means that which cannot be negated in past, present, or future. That which is, and is always is. That which is free from time, it's nitya. That which is free from time, that which is timeless, is free from past, present, and future, can never be negated. That is satyam. The only thing that is satyam is Brahman. So, because everything else exists within time. If it exists within time, it immediately does not fit that definition. And at the same time, it exists within time. This is the problem with time. Anything that exists within time or is subject to time is always going to be bordered by non-existence on either side of it. Because if something exists within time, it comes into being. When it dies, it goes out of being. Okay? So that means the being, the existence that it enjoys, can't belong to it. Right? Because it comes from nothing, non-existence literally, and it goes into nothing. Nothing can't come from nothing. Nothing can come from nothing. What can come from nothing? There's nothing there for something to come from. So nothing can come from nothing, and yet when this is born, it is. And so the isness is the satyam, and the mitya, the thing that is enjoying the satyam, is called mitya. So if we use an example, even though it's a relative example, that's why we use the clay pot, because the clay, from the standpoint of the pot, doesn't come into being and go out of being. The pot, totally, 100%, depends upon the pot for its being. It has no being of its own. If it has no being of its own, it's of a different order of reality. It's not that it's not. We don't say the pot doesn't exist. We say it has a different order of reality. Here, this whole creation, everything that exists within this creation, that exists within duality, that is subject to change, has a different order of reality in that it has no being of its own. It depends upon me, on Brahman, that which is being itself, for its being. I am its being. So we say it is, it is, it is, it is, it is. It is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. That's the common denominator, that's the satyam, that's the Brahman, and its order of reality, it is the order of reality of isness is satyam. And everything else that we experience is mitya, dependent upon that satyam, dependent upon that being. And that is, in fact, our experience. The final order of reality is what we call tucham, absolute non-existence. And absolute non-existence is non-experience. It cannot be known, cannot be experienced. It's not there. So we have these three orders of reality. Brahman is satyam, means it is being itself. Tucham is non-existence. And then we have everything in between. Everything in between is the entire duality. And this whole experience enjoys satchit. Conscious being. Conscious being is the only thing that can't be, which everything enjoys in itself cannot be objectified. That's the thing. The being that you are is not an object that exists within time and space and can be therefore differentiated from other objects. When you get to what we call the pratyagatma, your being, the conscious me that you are, try to objectify it so that you have me aware of me. Who's the subject? Who's the object? Consciousness aware of consciousness. As though there's a subject and an object. There can be no subject-object there because what's in between the consciousness that's aware of the consciousness? There's no dvaita there. There's no duality there. So consciousness is self-evident. Conscious me is self-evident. There's nobody aware of me, nor am I aware of it as an object. I simply am self-evident consciousness. And I have to be able to distinguish me, this non-objectifiable me, which is self-evident, you know, from all experiences that are coming and going. The me is free. Yourself is not coming and going. It's not subject to birth. It's not subject. You're not subject to birth. You're not subject to death. You're not subject to change. And your nature is ananda, infinite. Your nature is infinite being. That is who you are. There's nobody more important to you than you. That's just a fact. People think, well, how selfish. But actually, all that you do, all that you give, all of your charity, all of your value system, all of it really is for my own sake, because I just become more and more subtle in realizing what really makes a person happy. So everything actually is a puja. Everything actually is just a puja to my own being. There's nothing more important than the wholeness which I am, the being that I am. That is what is most beloved. And so as I start to really discover the truth of that, when I start to discover the truth of that, this differentiation becomes so profound, because once you start recognizing me, the you, and then you recognize that this self, which is really the most beloved to me, once those words start sinking in, the reality of it, and then you realize that this me that you are never comes and goes, nor can it. That which is most beloved never comes and goes. It can't come and go. Your mind can never be away from it. And so the mind starts having for its primary attachment the ananda, of which is the truth of your own being. That becomes the primary attachment, or the primary refuge, or the home base, and everything else is Ishwara. And no longer the jiva resolves into the fact of my being. When the jiva resolves into the fact of my being, of me, into the me, then all of this, including this body, mind, sense organs, is just Ishwara. It's Ishwara because I'm not asking it to be anything else. So what he says here, this Uttama Purusha, which is the Paramatma, this Purusha, which is this other one, the Purusha that is differentiated from the Kshara and Akshara, which is the Paramatma. Paramatma means this conscious being, the me, which you have recognized is Parama. Parama means, the Paramatma means, I have recognized this me, this Atma, this self that I am, as being free from any limitation, desha kalavastu aparichedaha, that I, this me, it's not circumscribed by anything, not by time, not by space, not by objectivity, because all time, space, objectivity exist in this dream orientation, in this order of reality, in this vyavahara, in this empirical order of reality, which enjoys me, this non-dual, non-objectifiable me. So in fact, from the standpoint of the Lokatrayam, the one who says, Yaha Lokatrayam Avishya, that one, that self, that Paramatma, having entered this whole creation, this whole Mitya creation, having entered the Avishya, it supports that one who is really Ishwara, that one who is Ishwara, Ishwaraha Avyayaha, who is the Paramatma, who is immutable. Avyayaha means never changing. That one, having entered into this whole creation, supports it. Having entered in, it's not like the infinite non-dual self enters into anything. But you have to look at it like this. If I ask you to imagine a meadow, you have imagination comes. as the imagination comes, I totally pervade it. As the imagination comes, I have totally entered into it without any action on my part. When this universe is manifest, the Atma, the Paramatma, automatically by the manifestation of this universe enters into it without any action on its part. It's because there is nothing else but that Satchit. So when this imagination comes, it has been entered into by me, not as an action, but from its own standpoint, as it comes, I pervade the whole thing. So having entered into the three worlds, Lokatraya, means the heavens, the intermediate world, which includes this, and all of the lower worlds, whatever exists within duality, as that manifestation comes, having entered into it, I support it. Right? As though I have entered into it, I support it because I am its reality. That bibharati means to support. So having entered in, I support it. I support it how? As being the Satchit, the conscious being, which is itself. What is the substance? I support it as being its very substance. So what is the substance? Is the Satchit, is the conscious being, which the whole thing enjoys. What is the common denominator here of what is actually here? It is. Get rid of the names and forms, a new set of names and forms comes there. It is. You can never, it isness itself, being itself, is the substance. That is the support. That is the very being, which is the self of the mitya, of this nama-rupa. We'd say, when the snake is projected on the rope immediately enters the snake and supports it. Right? The only thing there is the rope. The rope is the support. It enters the snake. Once the snake comes, it is automatically entered the snake because there's nothing there but the rope. It can't but enter the snake because there's nothing there but the rope. And since there's nothing there but the rope is its very being, is its very support. So like that, this whole creation enjoys for its very being me. Me in terms of the Paramatma, in terms of the Uttama Purusha, in terms of the conscious being which simply abides a self-evident me. Self-evident me, not doing anything. This is the viveka that has to take place. Mm. And so then he says, let's do this verse. Yasmat kshanamati toham. Yasmat kshanamati toham. Aksharat api chotamaha. Aksharat api chotamaha. Atos miloke vedecha. Atosmi loke vedecha pratitav purushottamaha pratitav purushottamaha yasmat ksharam atitaha aham aksharat api cha uttamaha ataha asmi loke vedecha pratitah purushottamaha. He says, yasmat, because aham, I am beyond the kshara. I am beyond in the sense this kshara purusha, which is continually coming and going, I am beyond it, I transcend it, because as it comes and goes, nothing happens to me. I am the satchit, which doesn't change. The kshara, the changing, the kshara purusha, is the nama rupas, the names and forms are continually changing, but they're changing in me. I transcend them. I'm both immanent as their very being, and I'm transcendent because they don't touch me. They come and go without anything happening to me. So I am beyond the kshara, and I am uttamaha, the akshara also. The akshara also is something which enjoys the existence of the maya, which is an unmanifest condition. The maya itself is mitya, enjoying the satyam, the conscious being for itself. The maya doesn't have itself that comes into manifestation and goes out of manifestation. This maya has no being at all apart from me. So I am uttama even to the akshara, to the maya. He says, ataha, therefore, I am pratitaha, I am extolled, I am praised. as the Purushottama, as that most exalted person in the loka, in the world, and in the Vedas. So Brahman, the Atma, the Purushottama, the Paramatma, is that which is extolled both in the Vedas and also among the bhaktas. Shankara says in the world, among the bhaktas, among those who the devotees, and also among the poets, that which is the most exalted, that conscious being, the Purushottama, the Paramapurusha, the one from whom that whole creation comes and goes, that one is the one who is that Purushottama is the one who is always praised as being really the self of the whole creation. Even the Purusha Suktam, which we should learn sometime, the Purusha Suktam is a whole sukta, like when we learn Menda Suktam, and we learn Rudram and all these different Sri Suktam and all the different suktas. There's also Purusha Sukta. And the Purusha Sukta is just really a praise of Ishwara, the praise of Brahman in the form of his whole creation.
Yeah, what are you doing? What are you doing?
So...
She's making her rounds.
Yeah. It's okay, Tibi. So, yasmat kshatamatitaha aham aksharat apichartamaha atosmi loke vede cha pratitav purushottamaha. This is just kind of a verse that leads into the last two verses of the text that we'll do next week. It's okay. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om. We might not have class next Thursday. I might be not certain to just watch for your email, because I think I'm going to go up to the property Thursday and Friday. I have a person, Armando, the one who does all the work for me in Stockton, is going to come up there and just set him up to do some work. I'm not sure though. Maybe I'll try to do all of it in just one day on Friday. That might be too hard, because I'm going to be back for Saturday's class. Anyway, I'll let you know. Just a warning. Mm-hmm. Put you on alert.
Is the Kshara Purusha the same as Maya Upadhi?
Akshara. The Akshara Purusha is the Maya Upadhi that, when it comes into manifestation, becomes the Kshara Purusha. So the akshara purusha is really causal to the kshara purusha. Kshara means that which is subject to disintegration and change and destruction. Akshara is that which is causal to that. So things come and go into and out of that.
Well, does it come and go? Do you consider
no,
it?
No, it's beginningless. That's why we say the Maya Upadhi is beginningless. That means it's not destructible. But all of the names and forms, when manifest condition, are subject to destruction. The birth and death and change. Everything within manifest creation.
How does it differ from the Uttama? purusha.
The uttama is just Brahman, conscious being, which is really the sat chit of even the akshara purusha, because the akshara purusha is still maya, it's still mitya. Mm. It has no it's causal to all of the expression of names and forms, but itself doesn't have any substance. Its substance is the Padma Purusha.
So is it unmanifest maya, could you say?
Yeah.
Which is also manifest. That's
no, when we say Ishwara, uh-huh. What we're referring to is Brahman, the Purushottama, Brahman, conscious, mm-hmm. pure, infinite conscious being, and then we're acknowledging the Maya Upadhi, that incidental attribute. So Brahman, when we're looking at Brahman with Maya, we say that is Ishwara. Okay. Now,
is that
why
like
do
the pot plus the clay?
It's the what clay, the clay with the capacity to become a pot.
So it's the capacity, but not the pot itself.
Well, we would say this would be manifest Maya, right?
But it's not Ishwara.
Everything is Ishwara.
That's what I thought. So,
let's think about the Mandukya Upanishad, because you've come to those classes. Ishwara, from the standpoint of the manifest creation on a physical stula level, we call Ishwara Virat. On the subtle level, we call Ishwara Hiranyagarbha. On the causal level, we call Ishwara, Ishwara. There's Ishwara from the cause, that's the Maya Upadhi, all of which enjoys Brahman, right? The Virat enjoys Brahman. Hiranyagarbha enjoys Brahman. Brahman is the Uttama Purusha. And then the causal condition, Maya, enjoys Brahman. So Brahman with Maya is what we call Ishwara. When Brahman with Maya manifests in subtle condition is Hiranyagarbha. When manifests full as the physical world is Virat. So Virat and Hiranyagarbha, the physical world and the subtle world, are really nothing but Maya manifest. So Maya itself, when we say Maya, we're usually just talking about that causal condition. The one that is Sarvakara, the cause of all of the manifestations of names and forms. So Ishwara really is just Brahman with Maya.
Well, does Ishwara come and go, or does he go back to...
No, there's no coming and going, because Brahman is timeless.
Yeah.
And the Maya Upadhi is beginningless.
And it remains that
There's never been Brahman without the Maya Upadhi.
Okay.
Is Maya and Mitya the same completely? Or why do we have different terms?
Because Maya is the manifesting component, mm-hmm. and Mitya is its order of reality.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Brahman is the Sat Chit Ananda. Mm-hmm. Satyam is its order of reality.
Oh, okay.
You see, that's...
That.
Yeah. So we say all of this is mitya. Mitya means that it depends upon an adhishtana for its being. The adhishtana is the thing upon that allows the mitya to be. So the adhishtana of the pot is the clay. The adhishtana of the snake is the rope. The adhishtana of the creation is Brahman. And that Brahman, the whole vision of the Upanishads is for to give you the knowledge that your being, the Atma, this self, this Pratyagatma, this me, that this me actually is Brahman, is the very being of the entire creation. That it's not just that the very personal self that you are, that personal self is real, but it's the personal self which is the self of the entire creation. What I mean by personal self is, we say, oh, I want to be me, I don't want to be some universal self. And so the universal self is different than this very personal me. It's just that this very personal me is non-dual and is the very personal me of all beings. So I am actually me. I'm not the body, mind, sense organs enjoys me. And your body, minds, and sense organs enjoy me. The whole creation enjoys me. This me experience belongs to me. That's the Paramatma. So
So the self that I am is the self that you are, is the self that Ishwara is. It's not that I am part of Ishwara and you are part of Ishwara. This body is part of Ishwara, your body is part of Ishwara, sense organs are part of Ishwara, every object in the creation is part of Ishwara, but the self of this body and this body and this body is the self of Ishwara. There's only one self. So your sense of me, that what makes you me, the me in all of your experiences that you have, is invariable. I am the one who is always there, the center of every experience I have. That I is Brahman. That I is Ishwara. And that I is Ishwara in the sense of Ishwara's self. Right? This body, mind, sense organs is limited. The Maya, total Maya Upadhi is not limited. All of these individual Upadhis are included in the Maya Upadhi. Right? The Maya Upadhi is limitless, but this body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of it. So this belongs to the Maya, to the total Maya. But I am the self of the total Maya and the self of all of the individuals within the total Maya. Just like you, think of the dream. You're the self of the whole dream. Right? The dream comes from you, is sustained by you, resolves into you. The manifest dream is the Kshara Purusha. That into which the dream resolves is the Akshara Purusha, the causal, or unmanifest. And I, the conscious being, is the Purushottama, the exalted one, the one who is the self of the other two and not subject to...
What do you say about Ishwara when the whole creation goes into unmanifest condition?
Then it just abides
Brahman, the presence of Brahman still remains.
Yeah, right? then from the standpoint of Ishwara, the creation, the Maya is just like Nirvikalpa Samadhi. It's just totally resolved into Brahman, but it's there to come out again.
Okay.
Does that ever actually happen?
Oh yeah, I mean, according, we don't know that because we...
The Shastra says so.
According to the Shastra.
Once every kalpa or eon or whatever.
From beginningless time, it goes through beginningless cycles.
But it can also experience that in meditation. I mean, maybe not...
Oh, you get the nirvikalpa, absolutely. So imagine the whole creation going into unmanifest condition, that would be nirvikalpa. Whereas if you go into deep sleep, there's ajnanam there. But if Ishwara doesn't go into deep sleep, he goes into nirvikalpa samadhi because there's no ajnanam.
Well, how about when we go into nirvikalpa?
Then there's no difference. There's no difference at all.
Then the jiva comes back.
The jiva comes back.
From that state.
That's right, because the prarabdha that caused the jiva to take this birth hasn't finished yet.
The Ishwara is or is not Virat and Hiranyagarbha? Are they Ishwara or...
They are.
They are. Okay. So, but they are not the Akshara Purusha.
You see, just like...
That's what I'm getting. Is Ishwara the same as Akshara Purusha or different? Because it seems like Ishwara...
When we say Ishwara, if you say Akshara Purusha, that would be Ishwara.
Yeah.
But now the Ishwara, that's Brahman plus Maya, and Ishwara then can manifest as the whole manifest creation. Right? It's still Ishwara, but the Maya is manifest. So Brahman, with the Maya Upadhi, which can manifest and then resolve, that is Ishwara. Brahman with the Maya Upadhi, that Maya Upadhi goes through this process from beginningless time of coming into manifestation and going into causal. So you say Ishwara is Brahman with this incidental attribute that we call Maya. And Maya, what Maya does is come into manifestation and resolve, into manifestation and resolve.
So the Akshara Purusha is different than that because it doesn't come into manifest creation, right?
No, the Uttama.
No.
I thought you said that it didn't include Virat and Hiranyagarbha. Maybe I misunderstood.
You misunderstood.
Akshara Purusha is the same as Ishwara.
As long as you say Purusha.
Uh-huh.
So when I say Akshara Purusha, I've got the Purusha there, but it's from the standpoint of the Akshara. So with Maya, right?
What?
Okay. Yeah.
When the Maya is manifest in the Kshara, the Purusha is still there. But the Purusha, that Purusha exists free of Kshara and Akshara. When the Kshara is there, this is Mandukya Upanishad.
Okay. Yeah, so the Keep Purusha, going. That's the Uttama Purusha that's still there, right?
Yes. No, okay. Let's put it like this. The Uttama Purusha, what makes the Purusha Uttama, is that it's independent and transcendent. Right? It's both immanent and transcendent. The Uttama Brahman, the cell...
It's a different order of reality.
It is.
Okay.
But Maya is mithya and enjoys that order of reality fully. That's what gives Maya its being.
Yeah, but that's not the Kshara Purusha. Is Maya the
same? You're really confused.
I am really confused.
You're really confused. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure it out. So, Ishwar is Brahman plus the Maya Upadhi. And that's also the same as the Akshara Purusha.
Okay.
The Uttama Purusha is the same as Brahman.
Right.
But the Kshara Purusha is not the same as the Maya Upadhi.
Remember what I said about this?
Yeah.
The Maya Upadhi cyclically comes into manifestation and resolves,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes into manifestation, that's the Kshara Upadhi.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah.
Sure?
Mm-hmm. It's the manifest Maya.
Yeah.
Which is all we've ever known.
Except you have deep sleep state. You have deep sleep state. You have nirvikalpa samadhi.
But we don't really know deep sleep, right?
Well, you know it. You know it when you're awake as a memory. You don't know it when it's in unmanifest condition because there's nobody to comment.
Right.
Yeah. But you remember it. You can describe it when you're awake, just like you can describe the dream when you're awake.
That's one of those things I have a problem with.
It seems to me that Brahman has a higher status than Ishwara if he's...
Brahman is the self of Ishwara. Brahman is what is Satyam. Ishwara itself is Mithya. If you just take each... The Maya Upadhi is Mithya. So the Satyam Brahman plus the Mithya Maya, that combination is Ishwara.
Yeah, okay.
Ishwara includes all that is. The Satyam Brahman with the incidental attribute Maya, which is Mithya, that makes for the totality of our experience. Because here we are talking and gaining knowledge and all this. Here this creation. So this creation is the Mithya Maya.
Mm-hmm.
Mithya Maya means that it has to have an Adhishtana. The Adhishtana is Brahman.
And that's why they say that he's the most exalted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Ishwara...
Most exalted because it's Satyam.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a different order of reality. It's not subject to time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Good. Well, I think we have to stop. One more.
In answer to the question, how is it not the case that Maya and Brahman aren't two things, I want to say that, that basically it's a non-question, right? Because it's a fact of the reality of Brahman that Maya cannot change it. And Maya cannot be anything separate from it, and so
it's a statement of fact that you can explore in your exploration of the reality you experience. You can establish the truth of that statement of fact. So it's not just in your head. It's not just some like theology or some sort of theoretical concept. It's a reality of what of our actual experience. And so when you're dealing with it, it has to be unfolded as a pramana where the student has to actually recognize the reality of that is the reality of your experience actually.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So like upon seeing the reality of Brahman, it just is the case that
it is the
Maya
case.
The Maya is not in any way separate from that and cannot change it or the this order of reality isn't separate from that and can't change it, and that's just a fact of the vision. In that sense, it becomes a non-question. There's nothing to answer.
Yeah, I would say that's the fact of the creation.
Yeah.
And the thing is that fact is something that a person does not know, doesn't recognize. And so you have to take a student
from the non-recognition of that to the recognition of it, because it's there to be recognized. Mm-hmm. Recognized as a direct, immediate knowledge, not as a theoretical knowledge. It's right. Something to be seen.
But there is no other answer to the question other than that, right? I mean, there.
No.
That is the answer.
No. But the thing is, you have to remember when you say that, is that any amount of logic can support it. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to me, since consciousness is in every thought, and every thought is changing, but the changing thoughts never affect consciousness.
That's right. Yeah. Nothing affects consciousness.
So even...
That's the viveka.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows that.
Yeah.
Because because of that self-ignorance, there's a mutual superimposition between your being and the thoughts, which are mithya, totally dependent on your being. There's no viveka, there's no discrimination. So in this teaching, one of the things that all of the words and all of the different examples and everything are to make the mind see. Mm-hmm. That there's something, that you are stable, nothing ever is happening to you. But all of these mithya thoughts, mithya moods, mithya emotions are coming and going, enjoying your stable self. So in your experience, can you recognize in your experience that there is a me that is invariable? There's a me, a self. What makes you you is invariable. It never changes.
Once you recognize that, you don't have to discern it while it's...
No, once you know, then no matter what your mind's doing, mm-hmm. you recognize yourself as stable within that.
Yeah.
And that you never change at all, but that... Yeah. Needs to be recognized, because it's like a red hot iron ball, and then the mutual superimposition of the two, of your being and all of your experiences, is so thorough. The identification of the me-ness, what makes me me with this body, mind, sense organs, is so thorough that it's difficult for a person to make that. To recognize.
And once it's recognized, even though it's thorough, then what's that experience like? I mean, while you're doing everything and having all the thoughts, the presence of me is still...
The stability of yourself is there.
Yeah, and you can see that doesn't change, but you don't have to do a process of differentiation.
No, you don't, because you've already done it.
Yeah.
So right, everything that comes and goes
is
a superimposition upon.
That's right.
Right.
Everything.
Yeah.
So everything.
That's the snake.
There's one thing that doesn't come and go, and that is me. Yeah. That's the only thing.
The most exalted.
But because it's the only thing, then you can just dismiss everything else in terms of trying to recognize what you thought. There's only one thing you can't get rid of, and that's your being. Everything else comes and goes, whether you like it or not. It just does, by the very nature of the creation.
And you don't have to do anything about that. You don't have to have a thought process about that.
Once you know you don't,
because
the ajnanam has been removed.
Yeah.
You know? We have to stop. Yeah. It's getting too goofy. No, it's all... It's too out there right now.
I like Edward's questions.
They're good questions. They're very good questions, but we have to stop.
Are we going to do more on 18? We just did... We kind of did a little bit on it. Is it done, or...?
18 is more or less done, because I'll do it some more, but 18 moves into 19. The substances of 18 is 19 and 20.
See, he doesn't want the chapter to end either.
Yeah.
<That's true. laughs> Now you have a fan club. There's two of us.
Hi, Hal. I've seen your question. Pratyabhijñam and how it provides a sense of continuity.
We're fried.
Is this memory or something else? Okay. Pratyabhijña is the memory in reference to the self, where, say, like, I can have a memory of something I did yesterday, where I'm actually remembering the object. The pratyabhijña is the memory of
of my presence, the me that were, that is present right now, is the self that had that experience yesterday. So the pratyabhijna is the recognition of the same self being present in both instances. Do you see what I mean? It's like I can say what I did yesterday, I did this and I did that yesterday, and now I am doing this and that. So there's a recognition of this, of the same I who owns both experiences, even though the two experiences are gone. Yeah, that's right. Good. The two experiences negate each other, but the self remains the same. It's like the one who's the waking, the one who had the dream is the one who's awake now. The pratyabhijna is the recognition of the identity of the self in both experiences.
So it's similar to drikdrisha.
Well, you can use drikdrisha, but it's just here. It's more even more simple than that. Like if I say, I went to the store this afternoon. Okay, the I that is here now, I am relating to the I that went to the I that is here now, having this experience, is the I that went to the store.
So you're talking about the jiva or the self?
I'm just talking about the memory.
Is it the jiva or is it the self? What you're remembering?
The jiva is the self. There is really no jiva. The jiva is the mistake born of ajnanam, that the atma, that this self, which is really the self of Ishvara, right, is a transmigrating being. The self is not a transmigrating being. The self is not taking bodies.
So this sense of continuity between going to the store and coming home, that's what is it that's continuous? Are we talking?
It's the atma.
The atma. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. But the mind, the pratyabhijna, is the mind's recognition of that. It's a type of memory on the part of the mind. The self doesn't need memory, right? But I can have memory of this experience and that experience, of this object and that object and that object. That's called memory. But what about the mind's recognition, continual recognition, that this experience would belong to me, and this experience belonged to me, and this experience belonged to me. That type of recognition is called pratyabhijna.
Seems like it's a type of viveka, so is that it?
Doesn't have to be, because anybody, the pratyabhijna happens for everybody. Like, before you had any knowledge at all, you would say, I went to the store yesterday. So the mind itself.
But that person is talking about the jiva when they say that, right?
Well, they're talking about the jiva because that's all they know. But right. Actually, they're talking about Brahman. They
so pratyabhijna could be a mistaken sense of jiva. It could also be Brahman, the one who knows.
Yeah, but that's not quite the point. You're taking it farther than how we're using it. Mm-hmm. How we're using it is just like how, with or without knowledge, we would be talking about memory. Now we're just talking about, in fact, just as a jiva, even though the truth of the jiva is the atma, there's no real jiva, the atma is the jiva. Whether you know that or not, that the real jiva is only the atma, whether you know that or not, you still have a natural pratyabhijna, because the self is what is constant. In every experience you have, the self is there. So the mind is always going to be recognizing the I. Whether it has knowledge of that or not, it has experiential knowledge of it, because the self is self-evident.
And continuous.
And continuous, changeless. So the mind is always going to be recognizing it, whether it takes it to be the jiva or it takes it to be the atma, is irrelevant to the fact that it will continually recognize that in reference to every experience that you have. Yeah,
that makes sense. No, I was thinking we had this. This comes from last week. So and it, yeah, that clarifies some things. Knowing that it could be jiva and atma or both.
Yeah.
Depending
but
on
remember
the
that the jiva is the atma.
Right.
There's
it's
no
just the
there's
frame
no
of reference.
Yeah, one has one's considered the atma is considered to be a jiva because of self-ignorance. But there is no jiva apart from the atma. The self that you are
I just wanted to get clear. Oops. What that meant.
Yeah.
The house.
Okay, good.